chapters 33 and 34 in our last 3 or 4 hours together, and we'll take it from there. Let's start reading a little bit in chapter 33, then I have some slides we can help us see the sort of sequence of events here, make some general comments. We won't have time to go into a lot of detail, of course, in this area, but let's take a look at chapter 33, verse 1. These are the journeys of the children of Israel who went forth out of the land of Egypt according to their armies under the hand of Moses and Aaron. And Moses wrote their goings out according to their journeys by the commandment of Jehovah. And these are their journeyings according to their goings out. And they journeyed from Ramses in the first month, on the 15th day of the first month, on the morrow after the Passover, the children of Israel went out with a high hand in the sight of the Egyptians. And so that begins our thoughts on this issue of the whole journey. And you begin to look through all of chapter 33. I'll read some other little portions of it. It's a fairly long chapter, but you have all these names and all this sequence of where they've been. And we might have a tendency to just sort of say, well, that's very nice, but, we already got all the details before. Let's just skip over that, right? And that way we can end our night earlier and perhaps get a break, right? But you see, there's more to it, of course. There's some great lessons to be had from what is there. We might be able to just say a few things in general. What does this show us by doing a whole chapter of all these names? Well, they do have meanings, of course, and we could take a look at all the meanings of the names. I've given them to you on the chart, which we'll show you in a moment. Now, those names are from J.B. Jackson's book on names of the Bible. So, again, there are other meanings sometimes given by other folks. But he does a fairly good job. There are some we might disagree with, but that's available as a paperback book. You can use that. It's also available on eSword now, and you can get an eSword and use eSword and J.B. Jackson's books on there now too. But I've given you those to you, and the names can mean something about the situation. For instance, the Graves of Lust, right? That was a name given to a place, and it had an actual meaning. It gives us some information about the situation. And this is true with a lot of names of Scripture. But certainly another thing we see from this sequence of places, and I've only put some of them on your chart up here on the map that you have in your handout, that you realize that it is a geographic journey, isn't it? They've actually physically taken this journey. I think one of our brothers already brought this out early in the week. That there is a geographical or physical aspect to the journey. Just as we have a physical aspect to our journey, don't we? As we journey through the world. We certainly could say that. Certainly looking at this whole chapter, we could say, well, this is the issue of a chronological journey. There's a sequence of places they've gone to. And so we say it's a chronological journey as well. Well, that's a good point, and it is. It's sort of interesting to actually look at the chronology and find that there are some places missing in it. Why is that? And it's interesting to find out there are some places added to it. You wonder why that is. And we won't have time tonight to go to all the details of all the things that are missing or added, but we'll mention a few, and it should give some good insight. And so we have the geographic journey, we have the chronological journey, and of course, by looking at the names and looking at the process they went through and all the issues they went through, clearly the journey was progressive as well, wasn't it? They learned, didn't they learn more about God? Did they learn more about themselves, perhaps? And when we're on our journey, do we learn more about God? Do we learn more about ourselves? And of course we do. And so I think these are some great lessons, a progressive journey where they learn more about themselves, learn more about God, and of course they learn a little bit about the inheritance, right? What the journey has at the end. And of course, as I believe Colossians 3, I believe it is, around verse 20, 24, and there somewhere, there's this issue of the difference between the inheritance, what we have at the end, and the reward of the inheritance. Perhaps another brother's already touched on that. And so we see there are things about the fact that we'll have an inheritance, but there's also something about that inheritance when we're there. And so those are brought out, I think, as we look at this whole chapter and the next chapter, 34, but certainly here, as we look at the whole journey in a summary. And having read these first four verses, you see it starts out in Ramses, but you see the key is it starts after the Passover. As our brethren have already brought out, the importance of the Passover, and of course we see the Passover, as you already mentioned, three times in the process of the journey, twice so far, we've noted. One in Exodus, of course, And then when the tabernacle was built. And then number three, of course, is when they go over to Gilgal in the land. And so you see those in that chart, the three Passovers. So we've looked at that, and the Passover does become key on the 15th of the month. And our brother's already talked about the issue of not having fear. They went up with a high hand. I think our brother already defined that for us, looked at the details of the issue of the high hand. But you see, they also, one of the key things before they actually started, it mentions here in verse 4, they basically smote all the firstborn upon cast judgment upon or executed judgment upon the gods of Egypt. Again, the issue of Egypt. And you see, that's actually sort of comes near the conclusion as well over in verse 52 of the same chapter, chapter 33, verse 52. When you pass over Jordan to the land of Canaan, then ye shall dispossess all the inhabitants of the land from before you, and ye shall destroy all their... Well, their idols or their figures or images, perhaps your translation says, and all their molten images shall you destroy, and all their high places shall you lay waste. That is, they don't want to, if they were to take on and they were to get involved with the images, what must God do? Well, God's going to destroy those things. And if we get involved with them, of course, we may end up getting destroyed with them as well. And we have to be very careful. So here we have the judgment of God upon idols, and starting with the gods of Egypt, and then of course over in Canaan as well. Well, we then went on to look a little bit at the details. We see the first section then, starting in verse 5, the children removed from Ramses, and it goes through all the process there, talks about the different places they stopped at, and in verse 8, they removed from Haheroth and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, and went 3 days' journey into the wilderness of Etham, and camped in Mara. And they removed from Mara and came to Elim. So they sort of came down here. You can see in our chart that they've come down. Here's Ramses or thereabouts. It's in this area. And they come down in here. And these wildernesses, here's the wilderness of Etham where they come across. People argue about where they came across the Red Sea, but we won't do that tonight. But we could go into quite a bit of discussion. But it's somewhere along here they came all across. And there's various wildernesses mentioned in the scripture. They do overlap, though. So you'll see some of the, you know, it's like cities are mentioned, and they seem to overlap these wildernesses. Just keep that in mind. And then here's Sinai, and we, of course, and I have a list of the names down below for you on your chart, I believe, that sort of tell you what all these numbers mean, what the locations are. But here's Sinai down here, and a number of things happen right in this area here, with Amalek and with the tabernacle and the law being given and so on. They're all in that general area while they're there. So that comes out there. So you see the first part then brings us down into here, and we come to Elim. And Elim means mighty ones. And what you see there, it tells a little bit of something about that. It says there that there are the 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. That for whatever reason, he's describing all these places again, but now he points out, oh, by the way, this is this place. Because perhaps it's a reminder, and this is a suggestion, perhaps a reminder of what the inheritance will be like. Palm trees and water, and so our brothers already mentioned about the flowing waters and so on, the things of enjoyment in the inheritance. And that God would provide along the way to the inheritance. And this is one way he provided, of course, maybe perhaps a future look. But it's just a suggestion. But this mention specifically that is left there in our discussion of all these named cities we see this mentioned. And he comes along and you go a little further down and he adds two places. Dophka and Alush are mentioned in verse 13. And then so those two are additions. But there's no information given about them. We have the meanings of their names on the table, which we'll go to here in a moment. And then they camp at Rephidim, which we know about, where there was no water to drink. And so it mentions that issue. So we get the reminder that there was a problem along the way, but it should be a reminder now. Remember, this is a history to the people, right? They should be able to go back and say, okay, yeah, we remember what happened there. We need to be careful, right? God provides the water. And so there are some things mentioned that should remind them of what they've been through. But again, here, that was good. They got the water, and then they removed from there, went to Kibroth Hataava, and that, of course, was the graves of lust. And they removed from there to Hazeroth. That's where Miriam and Aaron rose up against Moses. And then they were moved from there, and they camped in Rithmah. And you might say, well, wait a minute, something is missing. And so we can see it better. So here's this is where we've been on the chart so far. We've been in the Sinai, and now we're going up toward the land, right, with the 11-day journey to Kadesh Barnea. Except if we go look at the table, and it'll make it easier to see, and I'll go look at the table here. Right here, here's Dakha, Lush, here's Rephidim. You can see numbers 33, we're going down. Here's number 3315, Sinai. We come down a little further, and there's some other things, of course, that happen at Sinai, and the laws given us on the book of Exodus and like. We keep on going, and we saw some things related to, again, Sinai area. And then here's the graves of lust. Numbers 10:33, 11:1. Here's where we are, 33:16. It's mentioned, and then we have Hazeroth. We say, oh, very good. That's in Numbers 33, and then we have Rithmah, which is in the wilderness of Paran. But you notice it doesn't really mention. Of course, we know it's nearby, but you see all this other stuff is not really mentioned, and Kadesh is not mentioned in Numbers 33, even though it's in that area. In fact, we see nothing really about all that happened. In fact, it goes on, actually, and you will see he goes next to Ramon Perez, right? 33. There's nothing in 33 other until we get the hair. What's happened with all the rest of the stuff? It's missing. It's as if what happened. As they look at the history of the journey, it's as if that had never happened. It's almost as if he said, we get to Kadesh Barnea, and we just continue on in the land. And all that 38 years of wandering, it's not there. And God sees it as if it were just like one journey, it seems, right into the land. Sort of interesting. And so that wandering of the people, you just don't see, like I said, you see it in Numbers and so on, in different places, in Exodus and Deuteronomy. But Numbers 33, as he looks at a summary of the whole thing, he skips over that whole thing to Ramon Perez. And again, these are the names, suggested meanings by Jackson. Again, others may have some other meanings as well. But they probably mean something or helpful to us in various ways, as we've noted. But we don't have time to go into the details tonight. But you can see, again, all down 33 now, starting here. After the skipping over of all that happened here at Kadesh, we now have all these names mentioned in chapter 33. And you see it all there. Brother asked me about the whole issue of after, or we might say the 38 years of wandering and so on, and what happened. Well, again, we don't have an awful lot, although we do have, and I just put that down when I left it over here. Let me show you the next page. Let's see. Here's where Aaron. This is where Aaron dies right here. And here's the second arrival, Kadesh, here. And so all that wandering took place right in here, right? We might say. But there's nothing about it. Like I said, nothing about Kadesh. And then even when they leave Kadesh, this is all we see, as far as the Numbers 33. And all we have are these places they stay. And then a brother asked me about the issue of, well, you know, it seems like 38 years. And how many places did they stop at in the 38 years? Well, this is the ones we have listed. And perhaps your brothers have other verses. You might see some others. Perhaps I didn't maybe get them all. But that's sort of interesting because then we have perhaps 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, maybe 15 or whatever over 38 years. It seems like there were some places quite a long time, doesn't it? And perhaps that's true. We don't know exactly how long they're at each place and so on. We do have a few places we know before, sort of the length of time, like Sinai was assumed about 11 months perhaps or something like that. But these we don't. And so when we look at the chapter 33 then, starting in verse 16, you see the whole issue of Kadesh Barnea is not even touched on, but they leave. And in verse 20, you go to Ramon Perez, which we just mentioned. And then they go to Libnah, Rissah, and so on. You can see the list, okay, right down there. We go on, and we see, of course, the continued journey. And they eventually, of course, get up to Kadesh again in verse 37. And so that's sort of what we're showing. The chart makes it just a lot easier to follow, and you look at the names and you can begin to study those and get an idea, perhaps, of what God is trying to say through the names and the places they stopped at. And perhaps they learn more about themselves in the names and God, may learn more about God in those trials there in the wilderness. And certainly it becomes a lesson for us about these all prepare us for the end of the journey, as we've noted many times already this week by many brethren. Well, we have to go on quickly because our time is flying, and I want to make sure we get to chapter 34 as well. Aaron dies, of course, verse 38. It's mentioned, so it's very important to see that that was not skipped over in the rehearsal or summary of the journey. They mentioned that Aaron had died. Of course, he was the high priest, and so that makes some sense. The 30 days mourning here. King Ahad is the war with him. Mount Hor, that's where that happened. We have a little date for that. We have the month and the year. We don't have an exact date. We already have the issue of the serpents brought out, but you see that's not mentioned either in Numbers 33. So another interesting thing. So the number of skips as far as things that perhaps were rebellions, and God seems to streamline the trip, as it were, in the summary, focusing on certain things he thinks important for them to consider. We have then, as we look at this whole issue after that rebellion, some more encampments at various places as they go through Edom and so on. And again, some names. You see right here is chapter 33, another one down here, Almon Diblathim. And then we have the kings of the east were destroyed. That's mentioned in Numbers 21. And we come all the way down. Here's Baal Peor, right? And that's already been talked about. We mentioned that. And then, of course, Moses dies eventually. And there Nebo, and that's mentioned in Numbers 33, so that's another important point mentioned. So Moses and the high priest are both mentioned, aren't they? And those are very important, obviously. We've already mentioned it in relation to Hebrews and so on, pictures of our Lord Jesus, the apostle and high priest of our faith. And so we've already looked at those details. And then, of course, in Joshua 4, they'll cross into the land Gilgal and have the Passover. So this gives us a summary, brethren, of just what's been happening. It gives you some names. But really, I think some of the key things I've mentioned right at the beginning in relation to chapter 33 is that we have the journey represented in various ways. Geographically, as we go through the map there that you have, you can see it's a geographic journey, as I said. You can see it's a chronological journey, that we have a series of steps taken, and God has, for whatever reason, put these in place. I think there's certain obvious reasons for some of it. Others, I have no idea why they're there. You might have a better understanding than I would on some, maybe a certain one you studied, a certain place, and it might make some sense, the name or whatever it might be. But that could certainly use more study, no doubt. And, of course, in the progression of the journey, the things they learn in the journey, and the things they learn about themselves and learn about God. Great important truths for us today as we're on the journey, that we learn more about ourselves, we learn more about God, and we progress along the journey, both geographically and chronologically, and progress as far as learning more. Well, we come then to, in our last few minutes then together, or last 15 minutes together here or so, we will come to chapter 34. Now, I want to be, just before I get to there, right at the end of chapter 33, we should mention, it says, in verse 54 of chapter 33, "And ye shall take for yourselves a land and inheritance by lot according to your families. To the many ye shall increase their inheritance, and to the few thou shalt diminish their inheritance, where the lot falleth to them." Know that word falleth again. Our brother just mentioned that, didn't he? Back in the previous chapter. And remember I think it was chapter 32 in verse 19, where Brother Keith mentioned the lot that falleth to us, right? Or the land that falleth to us on the east side. "And then there shall be each man's inheritance according to the tribes of your fathers," the issue of identifying with your father, as we mentioned, "shall you take for yourselves the inheritance. But you will not dispossess the inhabitants of the land before you. Those that you let remain of them shall be thorns in your eyes and pricks in your sides, and they shall harass you in the land wherein you dwell. And it shall come to pass that I will do unto you as I thought to do unto them." And Joshua, of course, rehearses this well, I believe, in chapter 23. I think Brother mentioned chapter 24 already, where they're to take the land. But he rehearses the fact that, you know what, let me remind you, you need to get rid of what the folks that are there. I believe it's Joshua 23. And so we have the end of the whole aspect. He rehearses the whole journey and says, now take that inheritance. And that's what the journey is all about, right? At the end of the journey, you have an inheritance. If I were to ask you today, are you looking forward, or tonight, are you looking forward to the end of this journey and to your inheritance? Anyone in here looking for that? Well, just one or two. Okay. Well, you must be really tired tonight. I understand. But we're looking forward to the inheritance. I know I am, brethren. I'm looking forward to it. And yet we have struggles, and just like they did, the journey is summarized for a reason, isn't it? Because they can go back, they can reflect back and say, yes, Moses, yep, we remember what happened there, and all the information not given to us what happened, they can remember what happened. Oh, yeah, at Elush this happened, at Dophka that happened, and Kadesh this happened. Oh, and boy, the lessons we learned as we reflect back. And so there's a use of history, of course, to help us along the journey, isn't there? And so that's the end of the journey is brought out right at the end of that chapter. The whole journey, and then says, hey, don't forget the inheritance and make sure you take possession of it. There's a bit of warfare they'll have to go into. We have a spiritual warfare. They had a physical warfare, of course. And we know the similarities. I think we've done a study in the book of Joshua a number of years ago and did a connection between the physical warfare then and the spiritual warfare we have today already. Now we come to chapter 34 then, and see what happens now. Because now we have the journey and all the issues and what that's done for us and looking forward to the inheritance. At the end of the chapter, we have the inheritance. And now he says, now let's talk about what that inheritance is. What are the boundaries of the inheritance? In chapter 34. And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, command the children of Israel, this is verse 1 of chapter 34, and say to them, when ye come into the land of Canaan, this shall be the land that shall fall to you for an inheritance. The land of the Canaan according to the borders or boundaries thereof. And now we're going to have some boundaries. And that gets to be very interesting. I'll bring them up over here. Again, these can be very helpful to have. Whoop, I went too far. And we'll go back a little bit. And I have a chart in your handout. The borders of the land. And here's Numbers 34 down the middle. Okay, so I put it right here down the middle. And you'll see, of course, that in the various places where you see the boundaries, and this is not exhaustive, by the way, there will be other places where perhaps the boundaries are mentioned. I brought out a few of the ones where the boundaries are mentioned. And it seems sort of hard to comprehend sometimes. It has strange thoughts to it. For instance, when you look, for instance, at Genesis 15, it only has two boundaries, it seems. And we see that kind of thing perhaps elsewhere as well in other places. And so you might say, well, how can that be? What is this river of Egypt, for instance? Here it doesn't mention the river of Egypt, but here it does. Although it does mention the torrent of Egypt here, which is the same thing. And so I'll go back to that little map I had just to show you what we're talking about when we talk about these things. But just keep in mind, there are four borders, and I think they are important. We may not understand every detail of every use of the words east, north, and south, and west in the scriptures, but I think there's a relevance to them. And especially to the east and the west. Now, if we go back here to the map, I think the map's back. Yeah, here it is. Here's the map. And what happened here, this is not speaking of the Nile, the torrent. It's speaking of this Wadi el-Ashish, which is right here. That's the river that was sort of the boundary back then now. Of course, now we often we think of the Nile as a big river and so on. But this is Wadi means river, I believe, in Arabic, if I remember correctly. Some other brother might know. And so here's a little river that ran down, and this is the southern border. Judah was down here eventually. And we have then, of course, Israel went up further north, up near Lebanon. And the west side was the Great Sea. And, of course, the east side was the Euphrates River, right? And so that was the boundaries generally set as we see them put in the scripture. Now, one of the challenges, of course, is it's sort of a strange format because, see, when you say south is down here, but they would often look at south or southwest and northeast as well. And sometimes you'd only see two boundaries, and they would be really the northeast and southwest boundaries. The northeast being the Euphrates River because it was at an angle, right? Went like this. And southwest, because that river of Egypt, that Wadi el-Ashish, that also went like this. So this river and the river of Euphrates went like, and so it's almost like a box this way. And you could say, well, northeast and southwest. But if you did north, of course, it's straight north is Lebanon, and straight south would be the desert, some desert down here as well. And the straight west would be the Mediterranean Sea, and straight east would be the Euphrates River way out here near Babylon, right? But again, the Euphrates went up like this, up until, you know, where Iraq is today and so on. And so with that in mind, when we come then to these boundaries that we see in the scriptures, it makes a little more sense. And so if I go here, let's see, did I go past it? There it is. So when I come here and I see in Genesis River of Egypt, it's really the southwest boundaries. It's sort of combining them in a sense. And then when I see the great river Euphrates in the north, well, it's really the northeast because it's combining the two together because it's sort of on the north and the east. It came and flowed, of course, southeast. And then, of course, in Exodus 23, it mentions the desert, the Sea of the Philistines, unto the river, of course, being the river Euphrates, and then, of course, the Red Sea. Again, you see these northwest, southeast kinds of things. The Red Sea is a big sea, and it goes all the way over toward where the Jordan is. Numbers, it's very clear in Numbers. They make it very nice. We have the wilderness, we have the Great Sea, and we have a different Mount Hor. There's more than one Mount Hor, so you have to be aware of that, in case you want more confusion. And there are two Mount Hors, evidently, one up in the north, one, of course, where Aaron died, which is not that one. And then, of course, we have the, what we might call the eastern boundary within the land. You see the river ending at the Salt Sea. In the east, so it's sort of, again, sort of almost like a southeast kind of thing as well. Probably the easiest one to see is Deuteronomy and Joshua, especially Joshua, from the wilderness under the sea, from Lebanon to the Euphrates. This makes it very easy to see it. But when they try to combine them a little bit, then it makes it a little tougher to get the idea. But anyway, you see some of the boundaries, and they generally are connected or generally have the same sense, that the land was very large, wasn't it? That it was more, and this is Brother Keith brought this out already, the whole issue is, you know, that's why perhaps another reason we say that the east side, you know, that was part of the inheritance, wasn't it, really? Yeah, it went all the way out to the Euphrates. They didn't take the whole thing, of course. They weren't perhaps large enough yet or whatever it might be. But eventually, of course, much progress was made that way in Solomon's reign and so on. And so we have this brought out, these various places. And so we have in that south side, we've mentioned it already in verse 3 then, the south side is mentioned and mentions various towns associated with it as far as the boundaries go. And then we have the west border by the Great Sea. Now, that's a very important one. As I said, I think probably one of the most important directions in the Bible or compass direction is the west. And so when we see the west, we're often talking about the sea. The Philistines, of course, is by the sea as well, because that's where the Philistines were, right on the edge of the sea, right, the Great Sea. And in fact, I think they still have some of that today, don't they? The Palestinians, don't they have part a little bit of it near the sea, perhaps? And so under the Great Sea and the seaside. So this is all the west deals with the sea. And the word west actually in the Hebrew can also mean sea or seawards. So then the translation becomes a question, right? Does it mean west or does it mean sea or seawards? Based on context, obviously. And by the way, the same thing with the east. East is the idea of in front of or before. And so again, it can be used for it can be translated for two different ways. Something to the east or something before or in front of. And again, context perhaps helps us to tell what that is. But these two directions become very important, east and west. North and south, a little bit more difficult to comprehend, perhaps, as far as what God is showing. But east and west seem to have this idea of going to and from. That is, you see how the tabernacle is set up and how the temple was set up and so on, the idea of departure, of coming and going, something of that nature. I don't have time. I've done it in the past, of course, a little bit here when we did the tabernacle, so we'll leave that and you can go look at that some other time. But I think there are some connections there. North and south are more difficult, but certainly we see that the west becomes important to God as far as his tabernacle and temple go, and that those are in the west side, right, of the tabernacle, and the ark is, and so on. And so we'll leave that with you to think about, but I think there are some good things about the directions there, although they may be difficult to comprehend. It's used, I'd say, east is probably mentioned 150-something times, in the Scripture. I've looked at most of those, and West is about half that. West is maybe 70 or 80 times, maybe 70 times it's listed. North and South about the same as far as the East. But it proves an interesting study. If you have a desire to go into that kind of detail, you may find that helpful. But we have the borders, and so we just want to show then that God has determined the boundaries are. And that the man is going to use a lot in this case to determine God. They're looking to God for their help because God is to determine the inheritance, right? He's decided it. And that's very important to see because, see, if man were to decide it, what would happen? If God said, well, you all can decide what inheritance you want. You figure it out. What do you think what might happen? You think we might have a little competition maybe? That we all might want to have more than the other one and all that kind of thing? And of course, there is some sense, of course, that you can determine some aspects of your inheritance based on the journey, right? We already mentioned that. But you see, that's between you and the Lord, right? I mean, he's the one who's going to determine. He'll look at what you've done and say, now here's your role in the kingdom or whatever it might be, in the inheritance. And so we have this brought out to us, this whole issue of God's doing it. By the way, I think I may have mentioned, but chapter 34, verse 2, just to mention it again, it says, command the children of Israel and say unto them, when you come to the land of Canaan, this shall be the land that shall fall to you. Does that look familiar? Well, that's what our brother just mentioned in relation to the east side, didn't he? This is the land that has fallen to us. And see, the same kind of nomenclature is used. And that would seem to again suggest that what our brother said about the idea that perhaps this is what God had for them. It seems true. There's a consistency about how the wording is used, that this is the lot that had fallen to the various tribes. Just a suggestion there to support what our brother's already brought out to us. And we come then over past the different boundaries, which I said are great lessons. We could look into in more detail, but God has established, and we can learn great lessons about even if we use the boundaries of what God has put in place for us today. I sometimes will use that as a practical lesson to folks when I teach in this area. The issue of does God provide even boundaries today? Not even looking at the inheritance, but just a general illustration of how we can practically apply something. Do we have boundaries today that God's put around? Well, there are boundaries, aren't there, by His Word? And how often have we in our assemblies or perhaps as individuals tried to go beyond the boundaries that God has set? Have you ever done that? And perhaps you have less. You could tell me many more stories, perhaps. But we have, haven't we? We try at times to go beyond the boundaries that God has set. And as a result, there are consequences, aren't there? And all we have to do is look at the consequence. You can look at it all around Israel, right? And look at those boundaries and what's beyond them. And what do we? Well, we learn some lessons, don't we? Because at least we know, for instance, one of the boundaries they were not to go back to, the Egypt. Yeah, interesting. You go too far east, you go past the Euphrates, and what's on the Euphrates right there in the Euphrates, and past that is Babylon, right? Maybe don't want to go there, right? You see, there's some great lessons, I think, as you look at what's the boundaries and what's beyond the boundaries. But again, just to give you some things to think on, to consider as you do some studies of your own. Boundaries are important to us in our life today as well. And we see in verse 16 then, our final section, and Jehovah spoke to, this is chapter 34, by the way, for those who are following along. And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, these are the names of the men who shall divide the land unto you, Eleazar the priest and Joshua the son of Nun. And so now we see, of course, before it would have been Moses and Aaron, now it's Joshua and Eleazar, right? Our brothers have already gone into the details of this change and the importance of this change. Then we go on and we see that there are also going to be men. You shall take one in verse 18, a prince of every tribe to divide the land. The difference here is that these men chosen will go into the land, won't they? And so that's important as well. And these are the names of the men. And who's listed first? The tribe of Judah is? Caleb. That's, of course, the tribe from which Christ comes, right? The line of the tribe of Judah has already been mentioned. Caleb, which I think some suggested means wholeheartedness. There might be other names as well, meanings. But great to see, of course, that he's one of the princes. Now, Joshua doesn't need to be since he's already, of course, going to lead the people. But Caleb's the only one that remains from the others, from this group now. These are all new. And you have 12, of course. The Levites are not included, of course, because the Levites, they have Eliezer, of course, and they're all separated. They're not going to have an inheritance. They don't need someone to represent them in the division of land. But it does give us a reminder, of course, that the inheritance involves all, right? All the princes there, one for every tribe, and all get to see what God is doing as far as the division of the inheritance, it seems. Perhaps a look at the future inheritance as well, and how we'll all be there, and God will divide up the inheritance, and appropriate sale, of course. He will do it. It won't be based on our thinking, but on His. And so he commands these to distribute the land. He wants to make sure it's done properly in view of all the tribes, that all have an opportunity. And of course, you go to the book of Joshua, and this actually does occur. And so we see then that something that might seem sort of tedious to go through, and if you've gone through very quickly, two chapters, you know, chapters 33 and 34, but hopefully we get a little idea of, you know what, these can be important chapters. There are a lot of names and numbers and borders and all that kind of thing, but they can be helpful to us, and we can learn a great deal from them, I think. If we had a couple more hours, we could go into the names and perhaps even discuss it together. And well, how does that name relate to the inheritance or the journey to the inheritance? And we begin to think on that. Well, how would that relate? Why would they stop at a place by that name? Or was it given by them as a name because of something that happened there, like we've seen in several cases? Taberah, their burning, for instance. By the way, which is one of the ones that skipped in the series, right? So again, and looking at all the ones that are missing in the summary, and all the ones that are added in the summary, and it's very interesting to look at to see if we can ascertain perhaps God's teaching some things for our journey, perhaps. Well, those are just a few thoughts, brethren. We hope that God can use this in our lives, that by His Spirit we can take these few things that maybe seem very tough to get through, and yet we can use them in our lives and bring great glory to Him. And that's my hope anyway. Let's close in a word of prayer. I think we have a short. Do we have a short break, brother, after this, or are we going right in 5 minutes? So let's close in. Perhaps we can have a brother close in a word of prayer, and then we'll have a 5-minute break. Thank you. Oh, and by the way, before I just mentioned too, someone's in here. I do have a few extra CDs. We did a project this past year for those who might be interested in one of our CDs. It's a music CD that we did 10 of the old hymns of the faith, gospel project basically for outreach, and we have a 24-page gospel booklet in here. If you can use one, there's some over on the table where I was sitting, and you can take one. Feel free.
Can I spell it?
Brother, whatever you want to do, Henry, I leave it to you. But if brother will close in prayer, and then we'll have a 5-minute break. Thank you.